Hello, Sea of Red. This is Dan, and this week we're doing something a little bit different for the show. Because of the Flames bye week, Matt and I didn't think we had enough content to put out a whole show, but this past Sunday we talked to our old friend Kevin Olenek of the Bottom Line View NHL YouTube channel, and we sort of recapped the Flames season to date, looking at what's happened, what some expectations were, as well as looking ahead to the trade deadline. So we have that show for you coming up next. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back with a regular show next week.
Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
What's going on, Matt, bottom line viewers? NHL. It is I, Kevin Olenek here. It's with you late on Sunday, and you'll hear this later. But you know me as the guy that has been generally recapping most of the Flames games and the Western Conference games. And I thought we would do a little bit of a recap since we just got off the bye for the Flames. They played yesterday. They lost 2-1 to the shootout to the Winnipeg Jets, breaking a 7-game winning streak. That we would kind of do a midway recap with about the Flames and kind of see where they're at here. And guys, like I've occasionally been recapping Flames games. They are there every day. They are the hosts of the Fireside podcast that you can you can follow them and what they're doing. And there's great. It is Dan Stevenson in the middle. Hello, Dan.
Hi, how are you, Kevin?
Great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Thanks. And to the left of Dan is Matt DeBorg. How are you, Matt? Hi,
good. Good as great. Always. Looking great. Forward to talking smocky.
Yes, yes. You guys also can like and subscribe on our YouTube channel, and we'll, if you guys want to have any questions, we'll get to those quickly at the end, but we're going to kind of go through some of these and see kind of the themes of the season. And I guess the first place to start is the expectations. For me, at the start of the season, I picked the Flames to finish second behind some team in the North named the Edmonton Oilers. Let me hold on for a minute. Well, let me just pause for a second. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry. But, you know, we can.
I picked the Edmonton Oilers to finish only above one other team, a team in Las Vegas.
Wow. We should talk about that later.
I expected the Oilers to miss the playoffs as well.
Wow.
They only had three players that are any good, and Talbot, Draisaitl, and McDavid.
Yeah.
And they had to be like perfect in order to make the playoffs last year. So if any of them regressed at all, they just had nothing else.
Yes.
And we're saying that now.
That's pretty much as what's happened here. And now they're in a big dogfight to get back in and are fighting with Vancouver to have a draft pick. Anyway, leave them over there. We're talking about the Flames. So what
it's always fun to bug Edmonton.
Yes, you have to understand that those in the chat, if you're a Flames fan, we have to bug the Oilers a little bit. They get all the first picks. They get all the high draft picks. They've had all these opportunities and, you know, we don't. So
at what point does the NHL make a rule? It can't take a centerman again.
It's about that. Yeah. Might have to happen. Maybe this year if they get right. Yeah. Although Finney Trent said if they get the first pick, he's quitting hockey altogether.
I've said to Matt, I think their best, before I put the others away, their best bet would be to take that high pick they get and actually trade down. I bet you could get an NHL ready defenseman, which they need, plus whatever you can get later in the draft.
Yeah. I would agree.
Logic also, and sense with the Oilers. When has that ever been combined?
Yeah. And also I think they need to focus. Do you know, I didn't realize this, that this is a fun fact. Did you know that there's only one player that was selected after the first round in the entire NHL that the Oilers have drafted, and he's not even on their team?
It isn't is Tobias Rieder. Yeah.
That is amazing.
Well, that's the thing. They should just trade every pick after the first round. Just get rid of them. Whatever player you get is automatically going to be better than what you're using the picks for, so might as well just maximize the asset.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, put them over here. What were your expectations of the Flames this season?
One of the top five teams in the NHL. Yeah, I thought they were going to be one of the top five teams. A legitimate Stanley Cup contender. I still do.
Dan?
I expected this to be a playoff team. I thought that going in, we had what it would take to make the playoffs, especially in what I anticipated to be a weak Pacific division. I don't think the Flames are quite ready to contend for the Cup yet. I mean, could they be a Cinderella team? Maybe, but I think there's still a few pieces the Flames need for we can look at them as legitimate Cup contenders.
Okay. So, Matt, would you say that you're disappointed where they are right now? Or are you guys like, this is where we expected the Flames to be?
Well, I was a little disappointed. In one of our previous shows, like, I was like full on the fire Glenn Gullitson bandwagon and gave a bunch of reasons why. And part of which was that he wasn't showing enough emotion, which that changed.
Hold on, let me throw my pen.
Yeah. You know, he should be the actor playing the guy on Game of Thrones, the guy who threw the javelin at the dragon.
Yes. Yeah. That almost was symbolic of what happened, really. Yeah. So I think maybe the two... Okay, let's start with the beginning here. So the two big offseason acquisitions was, first of all, you couldn't bring Brian Elliott back even after the performance against Anaheim. Especially game three when you let the Ducks back in and you got swept. You couldn't, PR-wise, team-wise, you couldn't bring Brian Elliott back. You brought in Mike Smith. I think there was a little bit of cynicism for him. But there was a lot of excitement about Travis Hamonic, although some say maybe they gave up too much. So what did you think, what have you thought about both of those guys?
Dan, go ahead.
I'll start here. Matt knows that last year I was pushing for, at the time, the Flames to bring in Fleury. I thought that Fleury would be the better goaltending pick. I thought he'd be cheaper to bring in. And as a 1 or 2 year stopgap until Gillies or Parsons was ready, I thought Fleury would probably be the better choice. When Smith did come in, I think some of us looked at it and said, Treliving's bringing in yet another guy from the Coyotes, a team that he's very familiar with. Is this the best deal or is this just the guy he's most familiar with? And I'll say right now, I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I'm pleasantly surprised by Smith. I don't think we can get two seasons out of him like this, but good on him for doing this for one season. I think next year we see a reduced role and an increased role by whoever, whether it's Riddick or Gillies or whoever's his backup. As far as the other player you mentioned, Hamonic, I had an inkling Hamonic was coming here. I mean, there was talk halfway through last season that he wanted out of the Islanders. I couldn't blame him. Do I think we gave up too much? Probably, but when you make a deal to the draft, you have to expect you're going to give up too much. It's like dealing at the deadline. You're going to pay more than you should.
Yeah, cool. And with Mike Smith, with how badly both Johnson and Elliott performed towards the end of last season, you have to go with what you know. And Treliving knows Mike Smith really well, and he knows what he can do. So go with what you know. And he's played well. So you can't really argue with that. And you have to look at Arizona. The team in front of Smith in Arizona for the last like 7 years has been beyond terrible. Like ever since they went to the conference finals that one year. So how much of that's on the goalie versus everybody else? And I think now that he's behind a team that actually has some talent on it, that you're seeing that change in his level of play. And as for Hamonic, the Flames, after Weidman and Englund last year, like realistically, they only had three NHL defensemen for the first like 5 months of the season until they got Stone. So they needed to do something. It didn't matter who, as long as you are a legitimate NHL, good quality defenseman of some sort, they needed somebody. Hamonic fit the bill because he was not like all the other Flames defensemen who are mostly pass first and then, you know, defense later type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, last year, of course, because they had to bring in Bartkowski, who was a Canucks cast off. And there was Gio Brody and Hamilton, and then Weidman was surprisingly there, even though he probably should have been gone in a lot of ways. And then you had Englund, who's been okay in Vegas, but I mean, kind of a heart and soul guy, but not necessarily a guy that most people would have in their top six.
And Smith was brought in late in the year.
Yeah.
Or Stone, right. Story.
Stonewood, yeah. Yeah. And had those trades not happened, I don't think the Flames make the playoffs last year.
No, I agree.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about Mike Smith, if you look at the return on investment, I mean, it's probably the cheapest starting goaltender acquisition I can remember. Flames gave up Brandon Hickey, Chad Johnson, who was on his way out anyways, and a conditional third.
Yeah.
For, you know, a goaltender that's probably saved their butt more of this season than not.
Yeah. Especially that one. Well, he did something that hasn't been done in a Coon's age. He won in Anaheim and he got a shutout. Mm-hmm. And then if it wasn't for him in that late December game, that would have been a 9-1 game without Mike Smith, for sure.
There's a number of games that we would have lost without Smith.
Yeah. October, yeah. If it wasn't for him, we probably wouldn't be in the position that we're in. Although there was a stretch he was struggling a little bit. But
yeah, but when a goalie's got to play, you know, the better part of 82 games, you're going to struggle from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. And they quite frankly... I mean, I guess let's get to the other elephant in the room here, which was Eddie Lack and why that didn't work out. They weren't confident with Eddie Lack. And then the Detroit game of 8-2 didn't kind of prove everybody's point, unfortunately. Wonderful human being, but I just don't think he was really the fit that they wanted in Calgary.
Well, his acquisition was just an insurance policy in case Gilles Zaretic wasn't ready. Because you don't want to throw a kid out there who's going to struggle and be, you're going to need to make a trade mid-season. So Lack was just there while both Rittich and Gillies were figuring things out on the farm. And to Riddick's credit, he's come in and stole the job. And he's done really well. I think he's exceeded everybody's expectations. Even from when we signed him. Like, I think he was just more of an afterthought. Oh, AHL backup, yay. Who cares? Yeah. But he's turned into a legitimate potential starter for the team down the road, which it could happen. You never know with goalies.
Right. Go ahead. You're going to say something.
I was an Eddie Lack fan when he was in Vancouver. I thought he was a good goaltender. I think when he went to the Hurricanes, they changed the way they played. Lack's always played deep in his crease, and I don't think a lot of goalie coaches like that. And I think that it really kind of shook him and his confidence in himself and the way he plays. So I think bringing him in here is great, because then you say to the kids, look, here's the benchmark. This is our backup. Be better than him to get a job. It was a one-year deal, and I never expected him to last past the 1 year. It was this guy's good enough with some NHL experience to ride the pine and be the one who need him. And, I mean, it was his job to lose, and he lost it, right? He lost the job. He went to the A. He lost that job. So I would not be surprised if we've seen the last of Eddie Lack in North America.
It was that playoff series against us that I think broke Lack's confidence when all the fans in the Sea of Red were chanting his name after he gave up a goal. I think it was in like game four or something like that. Yeah. And like everybody was just chanting Eddie, and like you could see him like hunched over. And I think that just kind of broke his confidence. And then he was traded in that offseason.
Yeah, that's right.
And everything's just kind of gone
lacking right without now. Eddie.
True.
That's true. They're not. So the feedback that I've heard for Travis Hamonic for most people has been so. And I'd like to hear your opinion. Is it because his partner on the left has struggled for most of the season? Or is Brody struggling because of Hamonic? What's going on here?
Look at when the Flames acquired Dougie Hamilton. He struggled for the first like 2 months of the season in his first year in Calgary. And he was learning the whole new system of how to do things. Hamonic's only played in Long Island. And for the first 2 months of this season, he was okay. He was there. But since December, you've seen his game steadily pick up and he's performing a lot better. And I think that just the adapting to the new team is the main hurdle that he needed to climb over.
Dan?
Yeah, I think that here in Calgary, we're used to defensemen like Gio. Like now, if you look last year at Hamilton, who get a lot of points, where you still have very offensive defensemen. And we've seen that from Brody in the past. I think one of the reasons people are disappointed with Hamonic is he's more of a defensive guy. He's not going to put up as many points as Gio is going to, as Hamilton did last year. I don't know if I'd say either him or Brody are struggling. I think Brody's going back to what he is. I think Brody's performed way above expectations for a few years. So I think we're seeing both those guys being what they are. I don't know. That's the pairing I want going forward. But I think that, you know, Hamonic is doing his job okay as a defensive defenseman.
How would you pair the defense?
I think I would break up Brody and Hamonic and put them with younger guys. So I think eventually my guess is that Stone moves. So I would do something like Brody and Anderson, Brody and Anderson, Hamonic and Kulak.
So who would be your fourth? Would it be Brody or Kulak?
Right now, I think it has to be Kulak because Kulak's earned it. So Brody would be 3, Kulak would be 4. I mean, I think the whole thing there is you don't really have a top four. You have three, you have your top pairing and then 2 good pairings you can rotate in and out based on who's playing better.
So Gio and Hamilton are your number one pair and then flex everyone else out.
Exactly.
Matt, what do you think?
I think that I agree. I think Stone will eventually be the odd man out. It also depends if there's a trade, like if the Flames can do a Hall for Larson type trade or a Johansson for Seth Jones type trade, then perhaps you look at trading one of the top four defensemen, but how often do those deals come around? But if not, then I think Stone is the candidate to go, in which case then promote Anderson and kind of throw things in the blender like Dan said.
I mean, usually you want to have a lot of defensemen, and it's a good problem to have. Is we have too many defensive prospects. What do we do? I mean, most teams would clamor to have the top 5 we have with Stone in there. But when you're going, crap, we got Anderson pushing, we got Chillington pushing, we got, you know, Fox on the pipeline. That's a good place to be.
Yeah, and Bellamacchi is doing really well as well. So you have to start graduating guys. It's sort of like with the forward group where we're starting to see guys like Jankowski and Hathaway graduate into the NHL full time. We're going to have to continue to see that both on up front and on the defense core to keep just cycling everything through.
Yeah. And I mean, the Hall Larson trade has been faced by some criticism from us on the BLV NHL because I think they could have gotten more for Taylor Hall, but that's, again, an Oiler problem. And I don't think Larson's had been that great for the Oilers, but it's hard to do that. But it would be interesting if you can try that. It'll be tough, though. In the forward rank, I'm going to start with what I get picked on a lot. Because last year, we did a top 50, and I basically put Backlund, not like super high, but I put Backlund in the top 50 players in the NHL. It got a lot of laughter from my BLV NHL counterparts. And I tried to explain to them that last year, Michael Backlund was the MVP of the Calgary Flames. And they were arguing, well, Johnny Gaudreau was the MVP. Look at Johnny Gaudreau and how he scores. But I argued with this because the Flames, every time I heard the Flames coaching staff talk about Backlund in any line, with that 3M line, the Backlund, Tkachuk, and Frolik line, they were the best line on the ice. They were the most consistent. Backlund was the all-round player, where Gaudreau is exciting and offensively certainly more dynamic than Backlund. I feel like Backlund was more valuable. Can you guys give me what your
well on this? For me, Michael Backlund is the most important player in the organization. Because if you're wanting to win the Stanley Cup, you need guys like Gaudreau and Monahan and all that. But you also need players that are really good defensively. Because in the playoffs, you need to win by shutting down the other team. And Michael Backlund is the best defensive forward on the Flames. And he's probably in the top 5 in the entire NHL. There's only a couple, Patrice Bergeron and Ryan Kessler, that I'd legitimately put a little bit ahead of him, but everybody else, it's debatable. And I think that it's sort of like Hamonic. where the Flames have a lot of the one type of player, but none of the other. And so getting Hamonic was important because it addressed that need. Michael Backlund, in the same fashion, is the only truly good defensive forward that the Flames have. Like, they have other good defensive forwards, but he's a clear tier above everybody else. So I'm agreeing with you.
I think when fans think of the top 50 or the best player on a team, and we've had this discussion with our fans, people tend to look at offensive power. They look at Johnny Gaudreau and say, well, he puts a lot of pucks in the net, therefore he must be the best. And we've talked in our show about how for years, I think fans were disappointed by Backlund because he didn't turn out for where they drafted him. He didn't turn out to be that high powered scoring forward. He didn't turn out to be that guy who is putting a lot of pucks in the net and putting up a lot of points. And I think for a lot of fans, they say, well, you're a first round pick. You should be our top forward. And I think that Backlund plays, as Matt said, a very important role. He's the center of that 3M line. He's leading a very important line for the Flames, and he does things that we need him to do. And he's definitely that two-way guy. He's great in his own end. He can do whatever is needed. He can the net, but he can also shut down the other team. And I think the big question with Backlund is how much are the Flames going to have to shell out to keep him here?
Because he is an unrestricted free agent, and there would be 30 other teams that would want a Michael Backlund on their team.
Yeah, and some teams where he might even be able to play, you know, on the first line.
Yeah.
And realistically, for him, a 6-6 contract, 6 years, $6 million per, I think is fair and doable. If you're going more than that, it hurts, but it's also not completely out of line with where players of his stature are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be a cheap contract either way.
No. I think this will be a guy, when it becomes unrestricted free agency time, this will be a guy that a lot of fans will perk and be interested in when they do their research. I think when they watch the Flames, they see a Monahan and a Gaudreau, and they're like, these are the guys that are just, they stir the Flames drink. But my criticism of Gaudreau has always been, when it's been an important game, I've yet to see Johnny step up as much as I've wanted to see Johnny step up. And I feel at times,
and I think that too, on the other side of the coin, in an important game, if you're the other coach, who are you going to get your best defenseman on hounding Johnny. Them all the time?
Yeah.
So it's a give and take. And like, as good as Johnny is, he's also like a 12-year-old boy. So, you know, like, there's only so much you can ask from him. Like, at least like Monahan, he's big enough where if a defenseman leans on him, he can push through that. But Gaudreau, he kind of has to stay to the sides to be successful in important games, and that's also not where he needs to be successful. So it's a give and take.
I think if you look at any team that's won the Stanley Cup in the last, let's say, 5 years and go through their roster, they all have the one really good two-way center.
Yeah.
And I think that is the role that Backlund plays. And I don't see anyone else in the organization, whether in the NHL or in the AHL, who can play that role as well as he can. So I think that he has really made himself an imperative part of this Flames team if they think that they're contenders.
Yeah. And I think Jankowski could develop into that, but you're talking a ways away still. And that might end up being his eventual projection, but you don't want to be going into your like contender mode part of your development curve with a kid who's played like half a season as being your best defensive center.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and especially getting into playoff mode. Yeah. You don't want that for sure. And I think Jankowski is pretty comfortable in a third line role right now and has certainly prospered with Hathaway and Bennett for sure. Where do we go? So I think we would agree that the main MVP for the team this year has been Mike Smith, generally, I think. Can we give that to him?
Okay. Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My number two nominee is, and this is another one that I think people love and hate him. I think if they had him on his team, Vancouver. They would love this guy. But they went with Ole Olavi. Whatever. Matthew Tkachuk, I would argue, is probably my number two pick. Not because he has the huge stats, but he's done some little intangible things that has, I think, turned this team around in a lot of ways. He fought with Kessler during the game late in the year. He stirred the pot, sometimes far too much. Yes, he did a cheap shot in Toronto and a cheap shot in Detroit and got himself suspended and got his ass kind of handed to him. But when it's been time to get things done and stir the pot, even that Oilers game where they were down a lot, he kind of got them back into the game, although it was more Lenoir Brossois more than anything else. When the pot needed to be stirred, it's Matthew Tkachuk that seems to be there. What are you agreeing with me, or do you guys have a different perspective on that?
Well, if you look at contending teams, they and cup winners, like if you go back to when Boston won, I remember that series. You had just Brad Marchand punching the heck out of one of the Sedins.
Yes, yeah.
And you need that. And like Chicago had those type of players. LA had those type of players. You need that. And he gets under everybody's skin and he draws penalties because he is a dick. And he's ours, though. So, hey, you know, go.
He's our dick. We love him.
Yeah. Would we love Ryan Kessler if he was on our team?
Probably, even though, yeah. If he's on your team, you know, like we like Fleury. And yeah, he was true. A colossal jerk to everybody.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true. That's true.
I think, and I get a lot of comparisons of, you know, Matthew to his dad. I think, and I get some flack for this because of the Steve Moore incident, but if you take that out, I think his role in this team is very similar to Bertuzzi in his heyday. Bertuzzi was that big, nasty guy everybody hated, but no matter where he went, you loved having him on your team because you knew he'd protect your stars. He'd mix it up when you needed to. Like, we all hated Bertuzzi, but in Detroit, they loved him. And I think that's where Tkachuk is with this team. And I think as he matures, it's going to be interesting to see how the Flames use him. He's never going to be that pure scorer. He's always going to be a little bit of an agitator. But at the same time, you can't be sitting in the penalty box all night if you're going to be putting points up. So I think we're going to see his skill go up, and he's going to have a little bit of sandpaper there. But I think he's going to have to be on a line for most of his career with very talented guys who can sort of keep him out of trouble and keep him occupied by keeping the puck on his stick as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I've on our show, we've mentioned before the possibility of converting Tkachuk to a right winger and then first line. There you go.
Go with Monahan and Gaudreau.
Yeah. So
do you not like Ferland there?
He's growing on me. Well, it's one of those things, because Ferland got started in his NHL or his hockey life so late, we still don't really know what he is. And he didn't start playing hockey until he was like almost 17. So it's hard to determine exactly what his upside is because of the fact that he started so late. And could he be like the Flames version of Milan Lucic? It's possible. Or he could just be like Lance Boma from a few years ago, who had that one great season and then vanished back into what he was.
Yeah.
So it's just hard to tell right now.
Anybody and put them on a line with Monty and Johnny and get them some points too. I think when you look at a top line right winger, it's not Ferland. And I worry that Ferland becomes the next Lance Boma, where we overpay him based on one good year. He doesn't live up to it. And I think this is going to be a team that in the next 2-3 years is going to have cap troubles. I wouldn't be surprised if Ferland was one of the forwards dealt out of here. Maybe not this year. He's one of these guys you got to move while he's hot to get some value for him. I think with a guy like Hathaway and a few other guys, his role can be easily replaced for cheaper.
Okay, let's talk about that. Okay, so let's, because really, what were your expectations of Jágr?
Well, I'm a Florida Panthers fan as well, because, you know, there are like four of us. So knowing what Jágr brings to a team, he was brought in primarily to be a teacher, because that's like, even though he was still good in Florida, his main job was to teach Barkov and Huberdeau and all the rest of the guys how all the little tips of the trade that only a guy like Jágr would know. And we saw that even with Bennett and Jankowski earlier in the season, that he ended up helping both of them. And you're seeing both of those players play a little bit differently than we've seen them in the past. And it's frustrating that Jágr got hurt early. I don't think he would have been as bad throughout the like second portion. Like once he got hurt the first time, I think he would have been better. But he just kept getting nagging little injuries after little injuries after little injuries, and it just kind of snowballed. So with him taking some time off, hopefully he can get better and come back. But it's one of those things, who knows?
As Matt said, I think he was brought in to be a teacher. You boys keep two hands on your stick now. Right, he's that grizzled veteran.
Here.
Get off my lawn!
Puts
Master Turf in front of a stall in the dressing room. But I think for sure, anyone who came in thinking he was going to be on the first line, he was going to keep up with those guys, he was going to play and put up, you know, 40 to 60 points, is probably looking at the legend of Jágr more than the 45-year-old Jaromír Jágr. I thought he's a great third-line guy for $1 million. If you look at what $1 million buys you today for a veteran player, you don't get very much. So if we look at, you know, $1 million, he's a steal at $1 million. He's still a steal even at all of his bonuses for $2 million. But I think it was one of these things that, yeah, you need a veteran. You bring him in, he's as good as anybody else, the third liner. He's there to work with the young kids, but he's not going to win a scoring title. You know, he's here to be that fan favorite, to be that guy that sold a ton of new jerseys because nobody wanted to buy the new jerseys without that. And, you know, at the end of the year, it'll be another name. If you look at Calgary, there's been a lot of big names that have come through here. And it's some, and he'll just be added to the list of another big name that's played in Calgary.
Yeah. Yeah. Just another legend. Yeah. But,
and
you know,
if the Flames do go to the playoffs and Jágr is still in the organization and participating, like his experience from going through several cup runs will be invaluable to all the rest of the players.
Yes, I totally agree. And I can see that. Yeah. He's not necessarily going to be on ice, but off ice. But his injury has led the way for us to be introduced to Garnet Hathaway, who I've been a big fan of because he seems to be in the middle of everything, especially when there's a game-winning goal or a big play. I find number 21 in the middle of it in some way, shape, or form. Look, he's in front of the net again. Look, he's over here again. And then Mangiapane, did I pronounce that correctly?
Mangiapane.
Close enough.
I think it's been a pleasant surprise. What have your thoughts been on Jankowski, Mangiapane, and Hathaway and what they've contributed, which I think has been an unusual thing because the Flames cupboard over the years has been getting better, but we haven't seen this kind of impact from the farm system really in a long time, I don't think.
Well, one of the things that has changed about how the Flames have brought players in is that they're focusing on bringing smart people in.
Yeah,
that are just smart on the ice. Like, they don't necessarily need to have skill. Like, you look at Lomberg or Hathaway, like, neither one of those guys is going to win a scoring title or be on a top six forward in any, you know, like, if they are, like, how many injuries do you have?
Yeah.
So,
all you the know, players are but, down.
Yeah, we have 14 injuries. But,
that's when you just throw on the white flag and say, you know what, we're done.
Yeah.
That's it.
But with them bringing all these very smart players in, we're starting to see that manifest themselves once they actually do reach the NHL, that they stick and they do their jobs well. And Garnet Hathaway is a very good player in that he's always in the right spot in the offensive zone and he's always in front of the net. And like back when we first saw him at the development camp, it was readily apparent because he was a walk-on player that he was the best of the walk-ons that year. And I recall it was not even 5 minutes in. I said to Dan that like we should sign this guy, and
not us personally, but the Flames.
You know what I mean? Yes. Yeah. Garnett, come mow our lawns or something. I don't know.
Yeah. But, the lawnmower with the fireside podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, but he seemed to just grasp things better than most of the walk-on players. And when we watched AHL games, he was always doing the right things in the offensive zone, where it was surprising because he never had a pedigree of being an offensively gifted player, and but he was always in the right place. And he knows what it takes to be an NHL player. He hits everything that moves when the opportunity is there. And sort of like Ferland, he can just be that get under your skin type of player.
You say he plays with truculence?
Hey, I haven't heard that word in so long.
I was going to wear my tie around my neck like Bucky does for Twitch interview. But...
Yeah. I don't own a tie, so that's...
Yeah, I was going to do that,
otherwise
too.
Otherwise, I would have done.
Yeah.
But I got suit going, yeah. You know, so...
You're almost there. I think, you know, you were mentioning, Kevin, earlier that we haven't seen some of the depth from the Flames farm team, and I think that with the salary cap era, things have changed a little bit in that respect. I think teams used to draft guys they thought could be their first-line guys, and it's just, okay, you're not yet as good as our first-line guys, you're our second-line guy or a third-line guy. You tried to stock the team with first-liners. Now, with the salary cap, you have to find guys who can play certain roles for cheap, and I think a guy like Hathaway partly is here because he's cheap. You know, he's doing the job. He's less than a million. Is he a guy that's probably going to stay here for a while? I think eventually someone will come by and do Hathaway's job for cheaper and he'll be out of here. I think he's one of these guys that kind of peaks out at $1.5 million because he can't afford much more than that. But yeah, he's good. He's young. He's doing what he needs to do. He's found a role for himself. He's not trying to be the next Johnny Gaudreau or the next Sean Monahan. He knows his role in this team is sandpaper. The same reason Ferland made the team. We would not have hired Ferland to be a top line right winger. We brought him in to be a gritty sandpaper guy, and he's changed his role once he was on the team. And I think we're seeing the same with Hath. Penny, Matt and I defer on this. I don't think Mangiapane's going to stay here this year. I think he's still, and I've said in the past, I think that we ruined Bennett a bit by not giving him some AHL seasoning. I think Mangiapane is a guy who needs a little bit of AHL seasoning before I'm ready to bring him in full time.
Yeah, and I think... Eat Bread could stick in Calgary, but it's one of those things where is he best served by being in the NHL? I think because of the fact that he's, when he develops, he's more likely going to be a third, fourth line player anyway, that him being a third, fourth line player now is not really going to hurt him too much because that's going to likely be his job anyway. With him, the player that he reminds me the most of is Andrew Cogliano. Just not an excellent offensive player, but just a smart all-around two-way guy who can chip in a little bit here and there, but who will primarily be a good penalty killer for the team.
Durable, consistent.
Does all the little things right. Smart player. He's not the like most vital player on the team or in the organization, but just does his job well.
Now, let's talk about Bennett, because most of the Flames fans were angry at him for at least the first half of the season and didn't understand how this guy taking so many penalties was still playing and not being benched. But he seemed to have turned his game around and is playing a lot better. And seems to be more comfortable in a winger role than center role, although they seem to, I think they want him as a center. Is that my understanding?
With him, just value-wise, him as a center is more valuable and more important to the team than him as a winger. But if he's not a center, yeah. They're also, I think, trying to see if they can use him instead of Backlund, possibly. Cover all your bases. Like if you went Monahan, Bennett, Jankowski as your three centers, I think that's possible. Is it the best way of doing it? Probably not. But you know, if you can save money by not signing Backlund, who knows?
Coach Gullison told us media types at the beginning of the year that he thought that Sam Bennett was going to be the breakout star this year. He thought that Bennett would be the guy we'd all be talking about at the end of the year who had a breakout season. And I think that's a lot of the reason why they put him on the ice. The coach loves this guy. And I mean, we're seeing the same with Brouwer. He's probably got more chances than he should because the coach likes him and the coach wants him on the team. I think that he's a young player. And as a young player, he's got to work out. And I agree with you, Kev. I mean, it was there were times I was watching the game. It's like, come on, man, you're a professional. Don't take that penalty. Don't get frustrated. I'm surprised the team didn't reduce his play time or bench him, but I think that was a big reason he was eventually put on the line with Jágr to say, you know, kid, you got to slow it down out there. You got to be smarter.
Yeah. Be smarter. Be
like with my cage, young man. Right. Yeah. But,
well, with him, it looked like one of the problems with him was that because he wasn't getting any bounces to go his way, that he'd get frustrated, which would cause him to make mistakes, which would get him out of position, which caused him to take penalties, which would get him more frustrated, and like it just a circular argument there until he got an assist, and then his whole game changed and he's been good ever since.
I'll say right now, I don't know number 93 has the hockey smarts to be a center, but I think he's a guy that can fill in at center very nicely. Like we saw the game before the bye when Monahan was out, he filled in at center there.
That's right. Yes. Yes. And on the number one line. So yeah. I mean, he's getting it, but I've always felt he was better on the wing. I've never found him comfortable at center. And I know that he kind of reminds me of Doug Gilmore, and Gilmore had a slow start to his career and then he started to blossom a bit. And maybe that's the same. I don't know, but we'll have to see. But every time I've seen him, I've always liked him on the wing. Let's talk about Troy Brouwer, who's also the bane of most Flames fans' existence, because there was a time, and I've actually explained to people what happened with the power play is Troy, when it was a power play, Troy Brouwer actually just went on the ice because he just thought, oh, it's my time to be on the ice. So I'll just skate over here and do my thing. And then I think what they did is they put a little chain on him and said, no, you don't go on that power play. You sit there and let other
sit, people. Troy, sit. Good player.
Good player.
That's why coaches always have paper in their hands. So they can whack him on the nose.
Yeah. Good boy.
Damn boy.
Where are we with Troy Brouwer? I'm going to assume that we're probably seeing the end of Troy Brouwer in Calgary as this season goes on, but where are we with him?
Well, I thought that Troy Brouwer was not being used in the manner that Troy Brouwer needed to be used. He's always been a bit of like Matthew Tkachuk without the skill, where he needs to be that
Matthew Tkachuk without the skill.
Well, that feisty guy that goes and agitates the goalies and will hit people and just be a general disturber. And he, ever since he came to Calgary, he's been playing a very passive game. He doesn't engage too much with the other team at all. And I think he's struggled because of that. And like, if you look at like his career, most of his goals are scored where he's standing in the crease, whacking rebounds in. And he hasn't been doing that as much until recently. And his game has changed a bit recently, where he has been a little bit more physical and been around. Like, you look at the disallowed goal from the Jets game yesterday. Where was he? He was right in front of the net. Rebound was there, and he scored. Should have counted, but that's another argument for another day. But he's starting to do the things that he normally does in his career. And he's playing better, and he's playing pretty much at his career norms since December. So if that continues, there's not a problem. Then Troy Brouwer's just Troy Brouwer, and like he was in St. Louis and Washington, and nobody will care, and he'll just be thought of as like for a leak. But if he's the Brouwer that we've known for the first like year and a month, then yeah, you're looking at a buyout at the end of next season.
At $4.5 million, I don't think we as Flames fans will ever say, you know who we're getting a good deal on? That Brouwer kid. Like, I think this is always going to be, and every team has one.
I don't think
they'll
ever call him kid either.
That Brouwer man. Well, it depends. Jágr probably calls him kid. So I think every team has a bad contract. He's ours. He's not worth 4.5. He's looked good on the second line since Frolik went out on the now 2M line with Brouwer. 2M featuring Troy Brouwer.
Yeah, 2M featuring Troy.
It's like one of the Starbursts on like a box of cereal where it says new, right? 2M now featuring Troy Brouwer.
It's a stick like this, yeah.
But I think that Troy Brouwer is a good NHLer. I think, again, having veterans, and this is a criticism I've had of the Oilers for years, you can't have kids leading kids. you need veterans. And Troy's a guy that's been around for a while. I think as a depth player, he's definitely could be a valuable asset to this team. Making $1 million or $1.5 million, we wouldn't be having this discussion. We'd say Troy Brower is getting paid for what Troy Brower is doing. I think the reason we're having this discussion is he's being paid like a first or second line winger, and he's not performing like it.
And honestly, I think that long term, it's a good thing if Troy Brower stays on the second line and you move for a leak down a line, just due to the fact that he can teach Tkachuk a little bit on how to be a jerk more so and effective at an NHL level and where that line is, because he's always been effective at skating that line, Brower has, when he's been with the other teams. So I think having those two together, plus it would be fun just to have both of those guys in scrums like pretty much every shift.
Matt, I'll disagree with you on one point there. I would actually take Frolik and move him up. I'd put him as the right winger on the first line. And
I don't think Frolik has the skill. Yeah, I don't think Frolik has the skill there.
Last year, I like the way they looked.
It's possible.
Yeah, for a while. Yeah. And then you put what? Because so your line would be Monahan, Gaudreau, Frolik, Backlund, Tkachuk, Brower, Jankowski, Bennett,
and Hathaway.
And then
whoever's left on the fourth line.
Yeah, the Stajan, Lazar, Mangiapane.
Yeah, or Versteeg or whoever else they bring up at the time. Whoever's left goes on line four.
Yeah. And
insert name of. It would be same first line, like Monahan, Gaudreau, Ferland, Tkachuk, Backlund, Brower, Bennett, Jankowski, and Frolik on the third line. And then Hathaway with Mangiapane and either Stajan or Lazar in the center.
Is Lazar better as a center or a winger? I like him as a winger. They want to put him as a center.
It's one of those where I think they're trying to groom him as Stajan's replacement on the fourth line as the center, but I don't think he's that good as a center.
I think right now they're just trying to find out where they have value from. They gave up a second round to bring this kid in, and he's playing the fourth line. So I think they're just trying to see, well, is he better on center? If he is, let's put him there. Let's just get some value out of this second round that we gave up. I think he's going to end up being a winger. I don't think he's smart enough to be a full-time center.
So let's talk about our stick throwing coach, and Dan has a stat for us. But I think there was a lot of questions about Gullikson most of the season. There was a time I was questioning if this guy was going to last the year. I heard a rumor that there was Daryl Sutter and Dave Tippett were approached at some point this season to take over. I don't know if that's true or not, but I heard that rumor that was talked about. Then he threw a stick, and I think what was interesting about the stick throwing incident is everyone thought he kind of lost it. But what I took away is it was after the LA Kings game. They played an incredible second period, but they almost lost. They played probably their best period of the season. And what he said is, some of you veterans that played your best game of the season, you're all acting like it. He didn't target the young guys. He targeted veterans, and the team hasn't gotten a point since that point. Where are we with Gullikson?
Well, I'm just going to jump in because I had a show where it was.
We did a whole show where you ran on the coaching.
Yeah. And the main thing that I was, the main reason for it was that I basically said, hire Daryl Sutter so that way he'll yell at the players. Like, I never had much of any problem with Gullikson's system. It's just that he is so gentlemanly as a person that he doesn't show any emotion whatsoever. And like I was saying that, like, for the entire time that he's been here, I've seen him get upset like 2 times, and you need to see some fire there. Like, and the stick throwing incident is emblematic of like what I was looking for. Like, you just sometimes players just need to get yelled at, and you don't need somebody like Tortorella who that's all they do, but that fine line, and Gullikson was too gentlemanly and too passive. And now he's correcting where he's showing more emotion both in game and outside the game, where now the players are responding and they need, sometimes they just need a kick in the ass to get going. And I think that was what was desperately needed, was just that kick to get going.
Would you think it was organic or calculated?
Calculated for sure. I don't see that. I think that it was, let me find an excuse to do this. And that's how it kind of, I think they were planning on doing it just whenever it seemed right.
Do you think he practiced, see how I could get the stick, and when he could get it up to the presence boxes, he knew it was time?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I'm off the glass. Can't do it yet. Off the glass. Can't do it yet. Oh, that hit me in the face.
You just see the training montage of him with like a stick rack.
Yeah.
No.
With the Rocky music playing.
There we go.
So I'm going to go kind of the opposite way of Matt. I think the stick throwing was an on the spot thing. I don't think he planned to throw the stick, but I think he was getting mad with his team. I think it was bubbling up. And I don't think he said, you know what, let's go out and do the spectacle. And this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to throw this stick. But I think he was getting mad. And I think it just came to a peak. I think he knew Gullison's a very calculated guy. And he did it at practice deliberately because he knew media was there and people would see it. And I think he knew he wanted to go out there and do something media would see, knowing it would get out. But I don't think he said, I'm going to throw my stick. I think that part was very organic.
So let's get the stats, Dan. We have visuals here.
So this is an infographic. We didn't make it. It was made by Puck Geek. We posted it on our Twitter account. For those that can't read it, I'll read it to you. Just some quick stats here. Before the stick throw, the Flames had a -7 goal differential, 3.14 goals against average, and 8.13. Matt, what's the SP stat?
I have no idea.
Me neither. All right. Shot percentage? Then we didn't.
Shot
that
percentage.
Could, no. Oh, is it?
Yeah,
okay.
So it was the shooting percentage. Yeah.
I was thinking at first it's save percentage. I'm going, no, he's saved more than 8%.
He's not with Edmonton.
There's one thing I can turn, though. Yeah.
That's right. After the stick throw, the Flames have a +11 goal differential, 1.59 goals against average, and 13.3 shot percentage. So much better team since they got called out by their stick throwing coach. I don't know if it's just they're frightened he will throw one at their head, or if they just realize that it's time to, you know, straighten things up and come back and actually put on a season. But, you know, Gullison had a point when he yelled at the team and he said, have you guys looked at the stats recently? And they weren't playing like a team who wants to be a playoff team. And the stats are showing that.
Yeah. And a lot of the problems were just lots of stupid little mistakes that all culminated into goals against. And it wasn't like glaring mistakes where they were giving up breakaways left, right, and center and like, okay, tighten up defensively. It was like, I was like 2 feet away from where I was supposed to be, and the guy was open because of it, and the goal against. And it just enough of these little stupid things that were happening in a game, and that's what was costing them games. They got rid of a lot of those mistakes, their goals against come down, and they're winning pretty much consistently since then.
Hmm.
They still need to get some more goals.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, too. If you look in Bob Hartley's first year here, the Flames did a lot of the same. It was the veterans aren't playing well, so let's bring in the young guys to put some, excuse me, to put some energy into the lineup. And that's what we're seeing here. Jankowski came up. Hathaway came up. Mangiapane came up. And I think it's the coaching staff's way of saying, look, veterans, if you don't want to play, we got young kids in the farm who'd happily take your spot. So I think part of this is the veterans responding to the coach. Part of it's the veterans responding to that as a challenge of, okay, you know, we're seeing these guys coming up and taking a spot and playing well. We definitely need to up our game. Or, you know, we could see our last days as a Flame or in the NHL. I mean, if the stick throwing incident didn't happen, I saw the Flames demoting somebody to make a point.
And I think back over the years of the Flames, there has been, and even the Iginla Kiprasov years, there's been a comfort level that they seem almost untouchable. I don't want to say it's a country club atmosphere, but it's I'm a veteran and I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and it's almost like they drink their own Kool-Aid a bit.
And that was what struck me about Gullis. I think there was something about, and I'm not criticizing the Gina and I on that dressing room or even in the city, but it just feels like if you're a veteran, your job is safe in Calgary. And I think Gullison, when he threw the sticks, made a change. Like, you know what? We can go with younger guys. We have a, and just because you've played for so many years doesn't mean that you've earned your spot. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the country club thing, I think we have to remember there's things that go on behind closed doors that we don't see. And again, I think this was very calculated to be done in public for a reason. But I'm hard-pressed to believe that Gullison hadn't yelled at his team like this behind closed doors and we just hadn't seen it.
Hadn't seen it, yeah. Probably. Yeah, I would agree with that. So now let's get into what needs to happen here, and we'll talk about tree living and the trade deadline. Lots of things. I think there's a lot of ways that you can go. I think probably in terms of the trade deadline lingo, we'll put the Flames in the buyer spot because they're in the playoffs. The name that has first come up is Erik Karlsson. And I'm not one that believes that Erik Karlsson is going to be coming to Calgary. I'm not one that believes that Erik Karlsson will be traded this season at all. I think that's an off-season move. But where are you guys at with that? Is it a realistic thing to have Erik Karlsson come to Calgary? Would that be too much of a trade to give up? What are your thoughts there?
Well, Kevin, let me ask you the same question I've asked Matt all season. Is for us to make a trade, we have to give something up. What are you prepared to give up on this roster? That somebody wants. You're not getting anything for Brouwer, Stajan.
Furland,
I mean, what I do we have?
Something for Brody. I asked the people about Brody on the BLV NHL, and they were interested for Brody. So I could look at a Brody, but I think that's a tough trade to make for Karlsson, though. I think maybe Achilles, if you really believe that David Rittich is a number two. I'm not prepared to give up Tkachuk.
What about a guy like Shillington?
Yes.
If I mean, to bring in a guy like Karlsson, we have to find equal value willing to give up. And any Flames fan I talk to, including when Matt and I have had this discussion, I can't put together that kind of value.
And if you look at Ottawa,
because it would take a Tkachuk.
Yeah. Or Bennett plus some, like Bennett plus Brody or Hamilton. And something else of like a Valimaki or an Anderson, like it would be a very large amount. Like you're not going to get him for a bargain. Do the Flames need Erik Karlsson? And for me, like if the price is right and you can get him for cheap-ish, sure. But
this isn't a bargain bin trade, though.
No.
And like, I'm not saying like it's going to be a bargain trade, but like if you can get him for a relatively cost controlled deal where like you're giving up things, but you've got replacements, then sure, fine. But yeah, finding that right mix.
Remind people about a Karlsson trade, there's going to be a lot of potential buyers. So you're going to be bid up more than you'd want to. You know, it's not a trade where you go, oh, I didn't know those guys were in the mix, which we always see at the deadline, and you get a good deal. I really don't want to get into a bidding war with the probably 10 or 12 other teams that be bidding because we can't win it.
Well, we probably could, but would that be a deal that would make organizational sense long-term? And for that, I don't think so.
Is that trade enough to get Erik Karlsson here and Erik Karlsson gets us the cup?
I still believe the Flames aren't a cup contender this year, even with Karlsson.
I do think so, whether the Flames have Karlsson or not. So Dan and I like to disagree. But
I think too, for what you'd have to give up to bring in Carlson, yeah, they might be able to make it this year, but then you hurt your chances for the next 2, 3, 4 years going forward. And I'm not sure at the point where we're willing to mortgage that much future for 1 year.
Yeah.
And you got to figure that the Senators are like, they don't have any goaltender prospects. So not that are any good anyway. And organizationally, their defense is kind of lacking, and organizationally, their forwards are better, but they could use some help. So, but their two main needs are goaltending and defense. Well, Calgary, you're looking right away at one of Fox, Anderson, Shillington, or Valimaki is in the deal. One of Gillies or Parsons is in the deal. And then whatever NHLer that they would, or NHLers that they'd like. And at that point, does that make sense?
So let's do this. Just for sake of argument, let's say that we bring in Carlson. It costs us number 93. It costs us Brody. It costs us Shillington, and it costs us Gillies. And let's say it does win the Flames a cup. Could we be successful next year missing a top four defenseman, one of our top forwards, a top prospect, and a goalie prospect? Like, is it too much to give up where we're mortgaging the future for it? And I don't think we're at that point yet.
Yeah, I think Kulak could possibly replace Brody. If you lose Backlund, that's a big loss with Bennett, and you don't have the forward depth behind it. Backup goalies are finicky. You don't know what you're getting with Smith.
I honestly think there will be a time when that trade will make sense, when you're looking down the barrel like Chicago has for a number of years. If we have the cap room and the team to do this for 1 year, let's bring in that piece and make a run with it. But I look at this Flames roster as we've probably got 2, 3 year window here. If we don't do it this year, we could do it next year, the year after. I don't want to mortgage the future for 1 year yet.
And if the Flames had a contract like, okay, we're going to sign you 8 years at like $80 million. As soon as you're traded here, done deal. Then sure, fine, do it. But
again, I think Carlson will be too expensive if we signed him, and I think he wants to go to UFA because he knows he'll make a killing on the open market.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's at least $10 million per. And
in that case, the rental cost is far too high for me to rent him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a particular player that the Flames you think should be targeting? Would you target Doughty? Would you, or are you in the same position like Carlson? It's too risky.
I think we've got a good top four.
Yeah, I don't think the Flames need defense. They need a right winger badly, and I don't care if it's a top line right winger or somebody that you can get that would be a decent second line option. But they do need a right winger, preferably one who can shoot the puck. I think that's part of the reason why Ferland's had success is because of the fact that he can shoot well. And if he wasn't as good of a shooter, I think he wouldn't have been on the first line. And that's what the Flames are lacking. When you have two guys that are extremely talented at passing the puck, you need somebody to finish. And where's Prime Iginla when you need him?
We finally found the center. Where's Iggy when we need him?
Yeah, then what happened now? Yeah. So weird.
One thing we've thrown around on our show, Kevin, curious to see what you think. I think that the Flames are going to have to give up a defenseman to get a forward because you got to get something to give something. What would you think if the Flames did a deal with our friends in Toronto doing something like Brody for...
I asked John, who is a Maple Leafs fan, on our show if he would take Brody, and he said, yeah, I would. I don't know if you would get Marner for Brody, though.
I think it would be Brody and something.
Yeah, minor pieces beyond that, but yeah.
I would love to see Marner here. I like Marner. I have a feeling they would probably trade Nylander for Marner. I don't want Nylander here. Because I suggested Brody for Van Riemsdyk, but I can see your point with Marner for sure.
I think you got to go young. If you're going to invest that kind of stuff into a forward, you need a younger forward that can grow with this team.
Yeah, I would want some other pieces back, though, for not just Marner. I would probably look at a couple of other prospects at that.
Yeah, but I think for what you're going to give up, I think we would scrape up enough to get Marner, and I don't think you could ask for much more over that.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I would. I could see Marner playing with Monahan and Gaudreau, and that would be a good line. I would love to see it. Because here in Vancouver, they're suggesting, there's some people here in Vancouver suggesting they could get Gabranson or Tanev for Marner, and I don't see it. I don't see that even remotely being possible. I think there's a better, I think if there was a better deal out there, I think Brody is, no offense Canuck fans, but Brody is better than Tanev. And I don't even think we need to debate that. You can if you want, but you're wrong. But you're not getting Marner for Tanev. And I mean, I could see Brody for Marner maybe a bit more for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, if we look at where the Flames have strength, we talked about if we see a deal made, I think we're going to see them deal from the blue line or from their reserve in goalie prospects. I can't see them getting a defenseman because where do you put them?
Yeah.
So I think if they get rid of some, it's going to be Brody. It might be a Shillington. I could see them maybe moving. If they think Rittich is the guy, moving Gillies, moving McDonald. I think you're going to see them deal from the blue line to bring in a forward.
And if you look at Nashville, who's most recently the successful team from the Western Conference, they had four really dynamite defensemen, all young except for Shea Weber. And they dealt Seth Jones away because Matthias Ekholm was kind of ready to take a spot higher up in the lineup. And they had no forwards, basically. And they got Ryan Johansson. I think that the Flames need to, like, if they take any of the top four defensemen, remove them from the lineup, you have Anderson and Shillington who could step in to some role in the organization at the NHL level, and you wouldn't really skip that much of a beat, where the difference in the forward quality, you'll notice that.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be a step down, but it's not going to be, like, a drastic, like, going from Gaudreau to, like, Mangiapane. It's going to be a very degree. Yeah.
The other thing to remember is we have no picks to deal this year. I mean, we don't even draft, depending on how things turn out with conditions. We may not even draft till the fourth round. So, if we're looking at what to give up, we're short on assets to ship out.
And you can expect the Flames to be going hard after European and NCAA free agents this year just to make up for the lack of picks.
Yeah.
I think for no other reason we have no assets to give up. I think we may see this be – I don't think they'll do nothing. I think we might see this be a quiet deadline and the Flames will get their work done either the draft or in the offseason. But I just – again, I don't see what assets we give up to get a big player. The Flames going after, though, because they seem to be missing some veterans with – Leak down with Versteeg down with Jágr down is especially because it doesn't look like the Hurricanes are going to make the playoffs is make a depth move to bring in Justin Williams.
Oh, I'd love to see him here. I've always been a Justin Williams fan. I still think that, I've always said that I think the Eastern Conference is still a wild card, and I'm not entirely convinced. I mean, unless your name is Ottawa and Buffalo and even Montreal, you're out, but I think everyone else has a chance. But I wouldn't mind Justin Williams here. He's certainly a good experienced guy. You wouldn't have to give a lot up for him. He's won a
cup. No, probably our remaining draft picks, some of them would be enough.
Why do we need to draft in 2018 anyway? Let's just give them all up.
You know, I could also see doing a deal where it's, I mean, Stone's making 3.5. Williams is a 4.5 overall cap hit. I could see doing something like Stone for Williams because they could use probably another in Carolina.
Yeah, I could see that. That's a trade that makes sense. Put in the chat with my BLB counterparts. I asked if they would trade Brody for Marta. One guy's already answered. If I was Calgary, yes. If I was Toronto, no. Wouldn't do it.
Yeah, and it's one of those where Calgary would probably have to add some prospect of some sort, but it's you're not.
I could see the final cost coming out to be something like Brody and Gillies.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah,
or equivalent other prospect, so like Fox or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think it's to me. The teams that are successful at the trade deadline are the teams that make those depth moves. Like, and the Penguins have always been good at that because they picked up a guy like Ron Hainsey, which wasn't a huge move, but it was enough to get them a cup, I think, bring in some of those depths. I mean, you make the Ryan Johansson, Seth Jones deals earlier in the season. I don't think that that's a trade deadline move. It's those little subtle moves. And you also have to be careful. And I always go back to what happened in Washington. I think part of the reason that they lost that series to Penguins is because they brought in a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk, which tilted the chemistry of the team. And even Barry Trotz said it afterwards. He wasn't a top four defenseman, and he was a guy that had to play top 4 minutes. So yeah, you do have to be careful who the type of people you bring in. But I like a guy like Justin Williams because I don't think he hurts the chemistry of the team. You can almost bench a Troy Brower for a Justin Williams, and your team is
better. Yeah, and I could even see like somebody like Thomas Vanek or a few other like insert.
I don't want Vanek in Calgary. I know,
neither do I, but you know what I mean? Like insert middle six, right winger guy. It doesn't really matter who, as long as there's somebody, I think.
Yeah.
Like just right, another option.
Here's an option I floated by Matt in the past on our show. Purely as a rental, not looking to re-sign him for the future. If you could get a good deal on Evander Kane, would you bring him in?
No.
No, me either.
See, I'd be open to it as a rental. I think it's a hockey deal. He could help us as a middle six right winger. I don't necessarily want to sign him 6-8 years, but I could see bring him in, run him for the rest of the year, and then get rid of him.
I think he is a huge problem in the dressing room. And I think he is a chemistry wrecker, not a chemistry maker. I don't dispute the guy's ability.
And I agree with you, but again, I think coming into a dressing room where he's new and knows he's only going to be for a short time, I don't know how much damage he can do either.
I think there's just better options, period.
Yeah, I do too. But, and I think if you're wanting to get Kane, I think you'd want to sign him long term, maybe. But
one of the guys that at the beginning of the season I was pretty sure was going to move at the deadline, and I could have seen the Flames take a swing at, won't be happening now because they're in the playoffs, but I could have seen them trying to deal with Vegas to get James Neal.
Yeah, I could see him too.
Neal wanted to stay there going into this.
It's going to be interesting to see what Vegas does because they're in a very interesting situation. Because they could...
They're one of the teams I think it could take a swing at a guy like Carlson or a guy like Kane trying to really shore up a big NHL name at the deadline.
Yeah. Can you imagine an expansion team winning a Stanley Cup? That's ridiculous. It's not going to happen, is it?
No. They're not
if
that
it good. Does, the price for Seattle just went up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Now, here's a question for you. Would you target Ryan Nugent Hopkins from the Edmonton Oilers as a Flames fan?
So I have two thoughts on this. First off, I've always been, and I know that Feaster kind of wrecked it, but I always liked the whole Flames and the Oilers don't trade together. Like for 20 years, they had made a trade with each other. And then we messed it up by making a stupid deal. When I heard they traded together, I thought it was going to be big. And we brought in, Laddie Smead?
No, it was Stajos. That was the first one.
Oh, that's right, Stajos. And I said, come on, guys, you ruined the stalemate for Stajos. I know where you're going, Matt, but again, I think looking at the open market and looking at how tight, especially the East is, I think there's going to be a bidding war for Nuge, and I don't know I want to play in it.
You'd have to overpay for him.
That's it. I think he'll be one of the big pieces to move at the deadline.
Would you trade one of the defensemen for a thing around Nugent Hopkins plus something?
If it was one for one, let's say Brody or Hamonic for Nuge, yes. I don't think you're going to get that. I think Edmonton values him too much, and I think they're going to want more for him.
Yeah. For me, like if a deal was like, say, Brody for Nugent Hopkins plus Yamamoto, then maybe I would be game for that.
You're not going to get that.
You're not going to get Yamamoto.
I don't even think you could do a one for one.
Yeah, I don't think you could either. I mean, the caller, didn't they offer Nuge for Tyson Berry and that didn't happen?
Well, you know, the Oilers, they are too infatuated with McDavid, so you could pick all the spare parts like the Islanders did with Eberle.
You know, and I know people debate this, though. I think Chiarelli's a smart hockey guy. I can't see. I mean, he was given a pile of crap to work with, and he's trying to dig his way out of it. But yeah, if we could do the deal, sure. I mean, get the trade call made, and then we can sit here laughing at the Oilers. But the day that we trade Brody for Nugent Hopkins is, I think, the day that the Oilers implode.
Implode, really?
I just think that, I mean, from a fan perspective, if they make that deal, fans are going to want Chiarelli's head.
Probably. What about Pacioretty? I know his name has come up. What about
him? I don't want him at all, period. End of story. I absolutely hate Max Pacioretty. He is the laziest player I've ever seen for a captain. Like, especially Montreal. Like, come on. You have like this whole legacy of great players, yeah, and then this lazy bum. Like, no. I like the Canadians as well. So,
Patrick's going to make $5 million next year, $5 million the year after, or $5 million this year, $5 million next year. I would be okay bringing him in again. I think the Canadians are going to want a lot for him, but I worry he would be the next Troy Brouwer contract wise. I don't think we would get $5 million value out of him. And right now, looking at some of the contracts we need to re-sign, I would rather keep that money to use for guys like Backlund, to use for guys like Kachuk, to use for guys like Bennett, who are coming up on renewals, than sink it into a Pacioretty and wish we didn't.
Yeah. Mike Hoffman.
If you could, why not?
I like the player. I'd be willing to bring him in. Again, my question is, at what cost?
Yeah. And that's with a lot of trades. It just depends on what you're giving up and what you're getting.
I think Hoffman could be a first line. I know he plays center usually, but I could see putting him first line right.
Same here. And with his shot, it would make sense.
Well, toss a couple more names. A guy I like is Jean-Gabriel Pageau. I would love to see him here. And he's,
yeah, same here.
I mentioned him
specifically on our show and on Calgary Puck before, because I think he's just the dynamite depth player.
Yeah. Anyone else that I'm missing? Galchenyuk, no, I'm not interested at all. I just... He's an Evander Kane in that I think he's in such an enigma. Andrew Shaw might be an interesting guy, but he's a bit of a grit guy, not a shooting guy.
If you could trade him for Brouwer and like just add on to Brouwer, then sure. But yeah, otherwise, I don't really see the point.
No, I think it's either him or Brouwer.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be an interesting deadline because with how tight the East is, and I mean even how tight the Pacific is, I don't know that we're going to have a lot of teams who want to sell this year. I think you're going to be looking for a lot of hockey deals. Like, we need a forward union defenseman, let's try to make a hockey deal.
Yeah.
And I think there's only going to be two or three teams selling and a lot of buyers, so I think the price is going to go way up on everything this year. I think most business is going to get done in the draft this year.
Arizona is perfectly set up to be a seller this year, except for that they have nothing to sell that anybody wants.
I think they'll find a buyer for Ekman Larson at the deadline.
Where do you think he goes?
I don't know, but I could see, I've said this for a while, I could see him sign with Edmonton. They need a big defenseman. I could see them bringing him in and re-signing him for next year.
Okay.
But, I mean, he's their value. It's going to be interesting to see what Vancouver does at the deadline, too. I think they have some saleable pieces, and I think they could recoup some futures for some of their pieces.
Yeah, I mean, the names here that are being talked about is Gabranson, Vanek, Tanev, those three guys. There's some comments on Mike Hoffman. I'll get to them in a second here from my BLV counterparts about Hoffman. But I just Vanek is dangerous because he's never been a really great playoff performer. But if you get a draft pick, I think maybe most of the Canuck fans would be happy, I guess. Gabranson, I think, gets you a draft pick. But considering what you gave up for Gabranson, that looks so bad. Like, that you gave up a pretty high prospect for him.
Yeah, third McCann.
Yeah. maybe a dressing room problem, but you still gave a Tanev. I just don't think you're going to get what you think you're going to get for Chris Tanev. No, especially with the market of right hand shooting defensemen. I just don't see it. I have said this to Trent, who's the Canucks guy. He has yelled at me. The biggest mistake the Canucks ever did is they never traded the Sedins when they should have. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, it was the Iggy thing. They should have traded the Sedins, and you would have got a lot back. But now you're stuck.
It's the Iggy thing. It's the Flurry thing. Calgary's made that move historically many times.
Yep. Yep. And then they also, they'll need, I mean, Demko, I think, will play, but that'll be interesting. They need a lot of help. The Canucks need a hell of a lot of help on defense. It's weak. All six are weak. I mean, Stetcher and Hutton are okay, but they're not great. Forward-wise, I don't think Jake Virtanen is going to be here next year. I think I'm 20% right on that. I think Jake Virtanen at some point is going to ask to be leave the Canucks, because the way he's been treated here is, it's like the guy cannot do – if he makes a mistake, he gets back on the bench. And there's other players that make a ton of mistakes that seem to get on the ice. He's just not treated consistently enough.
And he's asked that they can move to really kickstart the rebuild.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a Virtanen for a defensive player of some sort would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, I could see Kane here in Vancouver more than Calgary. I think I can.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want him in Calgary, but I think he would be a good fit here.
Let me throw around two potential dance partners at the deadline for you guys. What do you think the probability is the Blackhawks are out?
I think they're pretty much done. The goaltender having issues, I think that'll be what sinks them.
Because I can see the Blackhawks and the Red Wings being potential trade partners for the Flames.
I've trying to start the conversation about Jonathan Toews, not as necessarily as a Flame, but I would love him as a Flame. You'd have to give up way too much.
It's a king's ransom for him.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. But I think you're the Blackhawks, you have to start that conversation now.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Well, realistically, the Blackhawks have to rebuild, and the sooner the better.
Yeah. Who are you thinking for the Red Wings, man?
So, I mean, I'm looking at the Flames. I think need right wing depth. I could see for depth right wingers, Glenn Denning or Gustav Nyquist.
I've always liked Nyquist. I think he'd fit too.
And they're both pretty cap friendly.
The player I'd like the most from them, though, is Andreas Anastasiou. He is just so quick that I think that would be perfect for this team. But you're going to have to spend a lot to get him.
When I'm looking at these, I'm kind of looking at depth moves the team can make without disrupting a lot of the core.
Yeah. A guy...
I'd like to bring in DeBrincat, but again, I think the price is too high out of Chicago.
Yeah, I would...
But one guy that I could see the Flames take a whack at in Chicago, depend on how you look at their roster. I mean, Chicago's got some interesting veterans, right? Just kind of overall, they've got some interesting veterans, but I could see the Flames take a whack at Patrick Sharp.
I was just going to say that name. When Sharp went to Dallas, I was frustrated by that because I wanted him here. Because I would have liked to see that. That's a guy I would have liked for sure.
You don't want Lance Boma back?
I was just going to bring him up. No, I'm okay with Lance Boma being in Chicago. I don't think he even wants to come back here anyway.
No. And Chicago, I think, is like Calgary, and that if they're going to make a big move, they'd be dealing from the blue line to get a forward. But I could see making a depth move to bring Sharp in for a depth player, whoever that might be. I could see doing something like a Sharp for Lazar or something like that.
Now, if Chicago is smart, what they would do is trade Brent Seabrook. Literally, if they could get anything for him, just let him go.
Period. So that's a deal I could see if you say trade Seabrook to Edmonton for Nugent Hopkins. That's the kind of thing I could see happening in the deadline.
Yeah, because they just need to get rid of some cap space and reallocate it somewhere else. And like Chicago's defense is okay. And like if they lose Seabrook, it'll be worse. But I think that it's just necessary to get rid of him specifically just because of his high cap hit for what you're getting.
At, you know, again, if we want to do a blockbuster deal, I think Chicago being out, I could see if the Flames want to swing for the fences trying to bring in Brandon Saad. I think he could be a guy that could fit on your first line, at least for the rest of the year, and provide some forward, you know, some forward momentum for that line being better than it is. But I think Chicago is going to overvalue Saad, so I think we'd have to pay more than it's worth.
What do you think the Flames' first round matchup is, realistically? If you had to pick.
Hopefully not Anaheim.
The second wild card, or the first wild card team, whomever that is. So
you think they're going to finish first?
First, yeah.
You really think they're going to pass the Knights?
Yep. Whoa. I think the Knights are going to fade, and Calgary hasn't played them yet. So I think that between the two, I think that Calgary will pass Vegas. And if not, then we'll play LA.
Do they beat LA right now?
Yes.
Okay. So first wild card team, my fear is that's Anaheim, who still scares the hell out of me. I still think I actually picked them to be in the cup final.
And I think it's different if we have home ice advantage in that one. That's what I think could swing it for the Flames.
That could be. But what do we need? I think a Brandon Saad would be a type of guy that we need, that, because I feel like Anaheim pushes us around.
The Flames, they have a lot of disturber type players. Let them play. You know, sure. Let Brouwer, let Ferland, let Tkachuk, let Hathaway, bring Lomberg up. Like, just let them go hit everything that moves and just have fun.
I'm not saying they're going to play, but if we play against the Ducks, I could see recalling just to be around here. Guys like Glass, guys like Gadze, guys like Kramrosa, just to have sort of your tough bouncer guys in the parking lot.
Mm. Yeah, just to remind them. Yeah.
Yeah, the pregame.
I mean, looking at how we, you know, what happened last year and the fact we went out and got a whole bunch of tough guys in the offseason, there had to be a reason for that.
Yeah, and realistically, the Flames need to be a top, like, home ice advantage spot at the end of the year. And ideally, they'd be playing one of the wild card teams just because, like, if you imagine, say LA is the other Pacific Division team and that we'd have to play, then, like, you're going to be beat up by playing them. And then you're going to be beat up by playing Vegas, because that would be who would be first. And, like, if you're having to play so many good teams, like, it just makes your road to actually winning the cup that much harder.
Yeah.
So if they can get a little bit easier of a go off the bat, then it makes everything down the road a little bit easier.
If I look at the playoff standings as they are today, as we record this, the two wildcard teams are Dallas, Colorado. I have no fear about playing Colorado. I think we could beat them quickly in that series. I don't want to say four games, but then that could be a quick one. I think Dallas would be a fun series to watch from a hockey fan perspective. I always like watching the Flames and the Stars go.
I think that's
the team I'm most concerned about right now, is with the playoffs being right now in the Pacific, is San Jose. I think San Jose, they're still a bit wiser than Calgary. I think they might fade a bit, but I think that's a team that we could struggle with a little bit.
Yeah. We've played well against them, but you just don't know what to get from San Jose.
San Jose chokes at some point every year. It's just a matter of if they'll choke against us or not.
Yeah. And for me, go ahead.
For me, the two teams that I'm looking at to vie for the cup from the West are Winnipeg and Calgary. I don't think anybody else has a realistic chance of winning the cup.
You don't think Anaheim is in here?
No.
Why?
Even if Anaheim's in, I think that they're not going to make it that far this year. Sorry, Matt.
Why? Because I look at that Henrik from Vatanen trade, and I'm like, if you look up the middle of Getzlaff, Kessler, Henrik, it is...
They're older. They're slower than they have been. I think that this is their last year to get some out of the current roster they have. And this is a year I could see Anaheim making some deals to move some of those guys out while they've still got some value.
Okay. Interesting.
I think it's too much old and slow over there.
And Winnipeg. You think they're better than Nashville right now?
Matt? I think Matt might be frozen. It's funny because at the beginning of the year, Matt was calling St. Louis at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and I didn't have St. Louis in the playoffs, actually. I had them out, and I had Winnipeg in because I was a big believer in the Jets, but...
I'm back. Technical difficulties with my computer.
No worries. So Matt, we were just talking about you think Winnipeg is better than Nashville right now?
Yeah. I think that Nashville... they're just... I think the loss of Neil hurt them more than... I don't think they have enough firepower to go all the way.
What about Turris, though?
I think...
Because that was a better trade than I think anyone expected for Nashville, for sure.
True, but...
I also think to go deep in the playoffs, you need good goaltending, and I think Nashville's got better goaltending than Winnipeg.
Like Hellebuck, though. I think that he could emerge as being a top starter, so it's one of those things that Winnipeg, I think, is the most solidly... And Calgary are the two most solidly built teams 1 through 20. And like any team can beat any other team any given night. But I think that the depth is the main difference that separates teams. So
I think if we look at, I mean, to go deep in the playoffs, you need to be deep. And we saw this at the Flames in 04. I mean, they were playing guys we never heard of. Who's Brendan Evans? Who's half these guys? And the further you go, the more banged up you get. I think seeing some of the depth the Flames have on the farm this year, guys like Mangiapane, guys like, you know, Hathaway, and still guys that we haven't seen yet, I think that one of the advantages Calgary's going to have over some teams like Vegas, some teams, I mean, Vegas has got no depth. They've barely got an NHL roster, much less an AHL roster. The things that could be in Calgary's advantage this year is how deep they are and the fact they have good. And I mean, is Hunter Shinkarik going to win you a cup? No. Could he come in and probably play adequately for a round? I think so.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. If we needed him in depth,
you know, if we have a defenseman hurt, could Anderson come in and fill that role? Probably. Could Shillington fill that role? Probably. Could Wotherspoon? Probably. So I think the Flames might go further than they should just because of their depth.
And if Smith goes down, are we okay with Rittich?
I'm actually going to say something that I said on our show, and I would go with Tyler Parsons. Even though he's the youngest of the bunch, I think he's the most talented. And when it's the playoffs, you're kind of screwed anyway if your starter goes down. So might as well throw the guy with the highest upside in and hope that, you know, it works. Sort of like Murray.
Like Matt, said, though, it gives us options, right? It could be Rittich, could be Gillies, could be Parsons. And that might give us an advantage because nobody knows how to scout our goaltending.
That's true. It's true. I hope we don't have that doesn't happen. I hope we can be as healthy as possible, but it's tough. It's a war of attrition. And
if worse comes to worse, Lack will probably be a free agent we could sign.
Yeah, sure. We'll bring him back, play a couple games, have Eddie Lack's dad and Michael Ferland's mom sit beside each other and have the cameras focused on that.
I'm sure we can find somebody as a free agent. Where's Leland Irving? Where's Kerry Ramo? There's somebody we could bring in if we need to.
Kerry Price? Just kidding. I'm kidding.
Brathwaite could come back.
Brent Brathwaite. Oh, that'd be awesome. Grant Fuhr had a special appearance. Mike Vernon. He still lives in town.
Yep.
Yeah. Ryan Miller. No.
What's Roman Turek up to these days?
I don't know. That'd be,
He's retired.
I mean, he's retired. He's a puck handling goaltender like Smith, so it's not a much of an adjustment. We're kidding, folks. This is not going to happen. But. Is there anything else we need to talk about? Where do we go?
As far as the Flames, I think we probably covered it for the 2017-2018 season.
Okay.
We could talk about the draft, but we don't have any picks. So
yeah,
that's the conversation right there.
Yeah. We pretty much get whatever's left in the fourth round.
Yeah. Well, it depends where the Flames finish, though, because we still could have a first-round pick and the Islanders could wait.
Yeah, the way it's looking right now, I don't think that happens.
Yeah, I don't either. But I mean, if they win the cup, maybe they would. Yeah, but if I
depends. And you know, in some ways, them winning the cup is actually detrimental to the draft because now we pick last in every round.
Yeah, that's true. So, okay, go other team, go. Come back.
The nice thing about this, Levine gets Friday night off. He can go have a nice breakfast, you know, Saturday morning, and waltz in at noon to make his fourth round selection.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. He's so relaxed. He's so relaxed. Okay, maybe two quick questions. If the Flames don't make it to the playoffs, is it an utter disappointment?
Definitely. Fireable for a bunch of people.
Okay. If the Flames don't get past the first round, is it a disappointment?
Yeah, and I think coaching staff gets axed at that point.
Wow. I think based on the futures the Flames have given up, they have to be a playoff team. If we don't make the playoffs and we give that good of a pick away for free to the Islanders, we've really screwed ourselves.
Yeah, heads should roll, period. Yeah. And it sucks, but accountability is a thing, and it would need
And I think not only off the ice, I think if they don't make the playoffs, there has to be big on-ice moves. I'm not saying we have to rebuild, but I think there has to be, okay, what isn't getting done with these players on the ice? And then that's the question that has to be asked. Maybe big moves do have to be done. Maybe then you look at moving a Geo or a Hamilton or something like that just to make a statement. I agree with Matt. I think if we don't make the playoffs, somebody in the off-ice coaching GM area probably loses their job, rightfully or not.
Is Burke?
I think if we don't make a pass,
Burke be safe?
I think Burke is safe.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not.
I know he's not allowed to talk to the media about arenas anymore. Whole other topic, but
I think if you're trying to make a statement, firing Burke doesn't do it. I think that's the cop out of we fired Burke, we're going to be better. Like no one's going to believe that. I think it has to be the GM that maybe the GM and Burke go together, but I just think firing only Burke does you no good. Yeah. It's rearranging deck chairs in the Titanic.
Yeah, I agree.
I think if they don't make it past the first round, is it disappointing? Yes. I don't think it necessarily.
It would depend on how they lost. Like if the goalie just falls apart like Elliott did, then.
Or if the goalie gets hurt.
Yeah, you have a bit of an excuse and some wiggle room, but, you know, if the team just comes out flat and just sucks, then the coaching staff has to go.
Yeah, at least they got to win a couple games, at least, I would think. But, yeah, I think at least getting to the second round, I think, is a reasonable goal for the Flames. I think
at the beginning of the year, I said to me, success this season is making an appearance in the second round.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm seeing. And I think it's reasonably possible with this team, the way it's structured right now and the way things are going. I think you need to be in the top three though. I don't think you want to be in a wild card, especially when there's so many teams in the Central that are rolling. I mean, maybe Colorado will fade, but who knows? But there's too many teams that you're gambling against, that you're facing against.
And I've said this in our show. I think, honestly, and usually by about the deadline, you know who's in, who's out. I think we're going to see this year most of the actual like wild card teams come down to April before we finalize who's in the playoffs and who's not.
Yeah, I agree. And didn't that kind of happen last year, right? We were kind of
a little bit. Yeah, yeah, last year's the first year we'd seen that. But, I mean, usually by mid-March, you know who's in, who's out. And I can see it coming down to even the 80th or 81st game to, you know, have two teams trying to figure out who's in and who's out.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's wrap it here. How do we follow you guys on Twitter, Facebook, your podcast? Tell us, for those who don't know who you are and want to follow, tell them what you guys do, and I'll give you guys the
phone. Sure. So we're Fireside Chat. Matt and I do a show every week during the hockey season, pretty much talking about the Calgary Flames. We're just two fans who do a podcast. Our slogan is for the Sea of Red, by the Sea of Red. And we pretty much tell people, if you want more analysis and you get on Fan 960, listen to us, because we'll talk about the real issues and we'll talk about what fans want to hear.
Yeah, like slamming the Oilers every week.
We do a healthy dose of Oiler bashing every week.
They give us so much material. What can we do?
It's actually built into our show rundown. Oiler bashing here.
Oh, it is. Yes. Do you Canuck bash?
Well, no, because you know they've only been terrible for a little while. Like the Oilers are on like what year 11 of being
terrible,
embarrassment to the NHL. So.
So I heard that next year they're actually going to try and promote Colorado from the ECHL to the AHL. I think a better idea would just be to demote the Oilers to the AHL.
Oh, That's part of what.
But anyway, getting back to where you can find us, if you want to hear more of our great Oiler bashing, our podcast is available wherever fine podcasts are found, through iTunes, through whatever you use on Android, Pocket Cast, Dog Catcher, whatever you want to use. You can always find us online. Our website's firesidechat.ca. On Facebook, we are facebook.com/firesidechat, or hit us up on Twitter. We're at Fireside Podcast.
Cool. Cool. And thanks, guys, for coming on. Of course, you guys know us here. We are the Bottom Line View. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter at BLVNHL. Facebook as well. We recap. We're going to be starting a couple of other things. We are going to be doing morning recaps or kind of just go through a little bit of a morning preview. We're going to try it and see how this works and go through the news of the day. The Flames next, what is the Flames next game? Is it?
I know tomorrow.
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow. And we are playing Buffalo, I believe.
Yes. Then right. 2 days after that, LA, then Edmonton, back to back.
Back to back. So I know.
The LA game's the one that really matters this week.
We have to beat the Oilers, though. It's ridiculous we don't beat the Oilers. That's a whole, I don't understand.
Well, it's their Stanley Cup. That's the only games that matter is beating Calgary. And they can just fade off into loserdom after that.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like the first game of the season. Oh, McDavid, so awesome. He gets a hat trick. And then that's it.
Yeah. But we will be recapping some games, and then we're going to be trying some other things. So subscribe on YouTube, follow on Facebook, follow on Twitter. You follow me, KVULE. How do you guys follow you guys on Twitter?
At Fireside Podcast.
Okay. And personal ones, whatever. But that's our show. Thanks for tuning in. We will talk to you all really soon. I didn't get to the chat. There were three comments and really that's about it. And so I didn't really get into anything else. And yeah, have a good night. Enjoy the show. Enjoy your week. We will talk to you all soon.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening, and we appreciate being on the show.
This has been another Fireside Chat. Don't forget to subscribe to the show at firesidechat.ca. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/firesidechat, and to follow us on Twitter at Fireside Podcast. Catch our show on the podcast channel at thehockeywriters.com. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike license. Hosted by Dan Stevenson and Matt Dubourg. Produced and edited by Peter Marino and Ryan Coetz.